This is Cecilia Kacik, the former state senator who represented Greene County. You are listening to WGXC Acra, 90.7 FM and WGXC.org.
On Tuesday, November 26th, the Town of Catskill Planning Board will hear for the first time the proposal from Peckham Industries about their application to the State Department of Environmental Conservation to construct berms made of construction and demolition materials on the site of the former Wholesome cement plant owned by Peckham off Route 9W in Catskill. Tune in at 7 p.m. Tuesday, November 26th, as WGXC broadcasts the Town of Catskill's Planning Board meeting and this presentation from Peckham Industries about a proposal for 600,000 tons of construction debris to be buried next to the Hudson River near Route 9W in Catskill. Tune in at WGXC.org 90.7 FM and at wavefarm.org/listen Tuesday, November 26th at 7 p.m. on the radio at WGXC.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Mid-Hudson Cable, serving Columbia, Greene, and Southern Albany counties with digital cable, high-speed internet, and cable phone services for homes and businesses since 1971. Mid-Hudson Cable, all the right connections on the web at mhcable.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Cornelius Eady of New York, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Good evening. I'm Kevin Factor, and this is Foraging Ahead. Tonight, I'm presenting stories. It's a miserable evening out, and it's a good time to tell stories. We're going to have Thanksgiving, and we're going to have to sit around and listen to stories designed to enlighten, embarrass, inform, delight, hopefully. I was fortunate enough to interview a couple of professional storytellers, Christina Tucson and Caitlin Langstaff, the founders of Hudson Valley Story Workshop, and the two folks who run the On the Fly Story Slam. A couple of dates regarding these story events. The On the Fly Story Slam, every third Friday at the Hilo in the lovely town of Catskill. So every third Friday, you want to hear some stories, go to the Hilo, and you can participate or not. And this is a slam style. Well, they'll explain a little bit about that. And on January 11th, they begin workshop, story workshop. I think there's six of them, and it's a commitment. But these ladies are absolutely remarkable. What they're doing. So we're going to have stories tonight. We're going to talk about the art and craft of storytelling and why people tell stories, what makes a good story from a not so good story, and I'm going to have two stories from their slam series, one by Rachel Ephraim and another by Michael Corso. So there'll be some interviewing and there'll be some stories. First, I'm going to present the Backyard Slaughterhouse Theater's adaptation of Edith Wharton's classic Ethan Frome. So stay tuned for this Sunday's Foraging Ahead.
Take your Wellingtons off, children, and Mammy will tell you a pleasant story.
Oh, Matty,
Thank you so much for meeting me here today.
How could I refuse?
Still.
It's been so long. 25 years, and yet.
Do you remember that day when I went to drop you off at the train station?
How could I forget?
Because my sickly wife suspected we were in love and was sending you away forever.
I remember.
And remember we stopped to go sledding so we could steal a few more moments together.
We were so impulsive then, like children.
And then we made that suicide pact so we would be together always.
So silly of us, really. So young and foolish. So romantic.
And then we smashed into that elm tree. But we didn't die. And you got paralyzed, and I hurt my leg. And we did wind up together for the rest of our lives, only it was with my sickly wife. And ever since then, I've had to take care of the both of you, and we've been ever so miserable since.
All so deliciously ironic. And I'm so sorry about your leg.
Yes. Well, we oughtn't keep Zena waiting.
So, next up is Christian Tucson and Caitlin Langstaff talking about On the Fly Story Slam, how it all began.
Christine and I originally wanted to open up like a spa. No, we wanted to open up a spa. That was how it cooked, right?
Well, you have a sort of a mental spa.
Yeah, well,
a mental
like
spa.
A body spa.
Yeah, we wanted this like outdoor jacuzzi, you know, we wanted a so anyway, that dream went away, and then we started cooking on, we were trying to figure out how we could work, because she's worked in the Coxsackie prison, okay. I've always been intrigued with working in with incarcerated folk, and then it morphed into, we're going to do a podcast, so we started working on a podcast called Juncture, but I think we need a new name. So we've been hanging out in closets lately, we've been working on that, and then we got, finally decided to focus in on the storytelling workshops. So we've landed in something successful.
But
we're going to go back to the podcast.
This came out of just a need for you to
work together and work on something that we both have our strengths in.
Yeah.
Together.
Use what we
need. Get rich quick scheme.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right. Oh yeah, we're going to get so rich from this.
Yeah. Well, the story slam for us is definitely coming from the mother of all, the moth. I mean, I think we take that
format,
which is we have a theme and we try to let the people know at 5 minutes you're going to get a sound to sort of let you know to wrap up, and you get a name taken out of a hat, so it can be people in the moment joining in when they get to the club or the bar, or you know the theme ahead of time and you're prepared and you come and just sign up right away. But it's usually no more than 10 stories, 5 minutes each, true stories about yourself.
No, no notes.
And ideally, you know, try not to memorize it. Just kind of, you know, shape your story and tell it.
When you listen to a story that's memorized, it's a performance, right? It's somebody who performs a story that they have prepared. And that has certain advantages and certain qualities to it. What we often tell our storytellers is that when you, not to memorize their stories, but to know them really well. Because when you tell a story the way you would around the dinner table or around the campfire, there's a certain intuitive and presence to it that you lose a little bit in the performance. And so you have to be very present in your story when you don't memorize it, because you're sort of thinking through it as you're telling it. And so it's a little bit more sort of telling it on your feet. And there's that sort of, I think the quality is that you try to recreate this sort of around the campfire conversation, right, where people are like, oh, yeah, I have a story about whatever the theme might be for that month. And you're like, you know, you're in the story, you're sharing it. And there's a certain
connection
with the audience that, that you get when you're sort of like, you know what I mean? Right?
Yeah,
as opposed to sort of performing it and standing up and doing more of a show.
You're really in your head when you're memorizing it. I mean, you're in your head to some extent because you're traveling through your story and you're getting the sensation and the senses and you're seeing it, but you're there's something about cording in, like right from the heart to your audience, that I think you're riding the wave with them versus just being in your head with your mapped out, you know, monologue. You know what I mean?
The great thing about telling a 5-minute story is that you really have to narrow it down to a few moments, 4 or 5 moments that sort of shape your story. And I think a really good story is one in which the stakes of the story are really clear. What's at stake for the storyteller? What changed from the beginning to the end? What are the sort of what is the motor or the engine of the story that got you from this place to another place? And not too much more than that, right? And so I think the best stories are the stories that have these clear moments, these clear stakes, and where the storyteller really brings the audience there by using lots of detail, by using lots of sensory impressions, you know, to make the audience sort of like see what they saw, hear what they heard, feel what they felt, with details, you know. And so a lot of the best stories I think we've had are pretty simple in structure. There isn't, they're not complex stories necessarily, but they're very, it's all in the details, so to speak, I think, you know.
There's usually some sort of twist or surprise or something gets revealed. You know, it's cutting the fat out. I mean, I also think 10 minutes is, for the most part, deadly, right? Mm-hmm. It's just a big, long rope to hang yourself by, right?
Generally speaking, I think that there is this feeling that you get that people are working through stuff while they're there. You know, they're not just sort of pulling it out of a book somewhere or out of, you know, a roster of stories. Like, they're sort of working through the story.
Well,
yeah.
That actually gets me to the question. Like, so what do you see as the purpose of this mm-hmm. storytelling?
Mm-hmm.
Both, I mean, for the audience and also for the storyteller. Like, what is, why? Why do people tell stories? Why do people tell these stories?
Well, so I think that part of what happens in that space, and the reason people get a little bit hooked on telling and listening to these stories, is that it creates this real sense of shared experience that I think storytelling always does, you know, whether you sit around the dinner table or some other place, but when you put it into sort of a community setting, it brings this sense of connection between people that is not about content as much as it's about this sort of ability to, I don't know, this willingness to put yourself out there, you know, in front of an audience. And, I mean, the good stories are stories that make the audience feel something, right?
Yeah.
And so that sharing of emotion is kind of not in a sobby way, but just sort of like, just, yeah.
Oh, even through laughter.
Yeah.
I mean, but it's people get it. I mean, at least, well, the storytellers who get up there, they get the fact that they are so 100% supported by the audience. It's a nice experience.
It really is.
You know, you come in, and whether you get to tell the story or you're just listening, it's just this give and take that. You know, it's a wonderful free night to just go out and get together. I mean, I was saying to Christina walking over here, you know, there was a time where we stopped going to the theater, right? We just can't afford to go to the theater anymore.
Right.
There's even a time we can't even afford to go to the movies anymore, at least in New York City. And why? You never have to leave your home anymore. You don't have to leave your home for anything. But the fact that people are starting to come out, you know, and get together in these ways. I mean, Christina went out and heard, you know, in her local town stand-up the other night. That was great. People are getting together and finding ways, I think, to finally come out of the woodwork together and support each other.
We are so trained to
be on our phones.
Well, be on our phones, but we're also so trained to sort of focus on, like, what we're going to do professionally and how we're going to distinguish ourselves from each other. And, you know, you go to college and people ask you, what are you going to do with your life? And you have to, like, come up with this whole thing that distinguishes you from everybody else and makes you super specialized or whatever. And so I've noticed when I work with storytellers that, you know, do story coaching or whatever, I call them up and they instantly start to tell me about their lives. Like, not about how great they are at their jobs or you know, the conference they went to yesterday or the great things they've done at the office or the books that they've written or something. They tell me about, you know, their divorces and their kids and their travels and their blah, blah, blah. And instantly we have this like human connection that otherwise I would just look at them as sort of as a professional, right? And instead I look at them instantly as human beings. And so when I go, you know, sometimes I coach people or we do the story workshops and you talk to people on the phone and you go to meet these people that you've worked with on the phone and it's like you walk up to them and you just hug them, right? Because you just like, I've never met them before, but I know all this stuff about them and they're much more human to me and much more sort of relatable to me than somebody, you know, who's told me about their job or whatever.
You're listening to Foraging Ahead. I'm Kevin Factor, and I'm having a conversation with Christina Tucson and Caitlin Langstaff of Hudson Valley Story Workshop and On the Fly Story Slam. Next up, we're going to have a story from their slam by Rachel Ephraim, a beautiful story about mothers and daughters.
Hello. So I've been performing true stories around town lately. My therapist says that it is a good way to channel my risk-taking behavior into something healthy and productive. So here I am. I am 34, I'm married, and I have two kids. So it would no longer be wise to steal that car or snort that Coke or troll that bar, which is not to say that my impulse for intensity is gone, but seemingly a normal life snuck up on me. So I have two kids. I have a 5-year-old and I have a 3-year-old. And for the first 2 years of my parenting, I thought I should write a book on the subject. People gave me compliment after compliment about how well-behaved and happy my older daughter seemed. And I just lived in other people's perceptions of who I was. I bathed in the idea that I had birthed something perfect and that I had been right to fantasize about family life as something stabilizing. Maybe even that thing that I secretly wanted when I was stealing that car or snorting that Coke or trolling that bar. And then my second daughter was born, and all of the things that I had taken credit for doing right, well, it was apparent I had nothing to do with them. Here I was the same mom, and I had the same rules, but a variable had shifted, the kid. And things had, they had really, really shifted. So to tell you a little bit about Simone, at 4 months old, she would pluck her eyelashes in an effort to fall asleep. It seemed to soothe her despite my efforts to nurse her and rock her. We would be in the car and I would turn around and she'd be holding her breath until she was red in the face and she would asphyxiate herself to sleep. Grandparents called Simone intense. My own mother said, "Boy, she reminds me of you know who," while pointing in my direction. But when Simone began to get so upset at the smallest of transgressions to the point where she would hurt herself in an effort to calm down, she would bite herself or hit herself, I searched for answers. And I learned about SPD, sensory processing disorder. I started to see an occupational therapist who explained to me that Simone's brain couldn't organize all of the stimulus that it was receiving. So she couldn't tune out the unimportant information like the whir of a fan or the sounds of a silverware clatter at a restaurant. It was like every day she woke up having just spent 10 hours at the mall. She was so perpetually drained and exhausted by her environment, and yet she launched herself into the most extreme scenarios. She was a climber, she was a rule breaker, she was a push me higher and higher type girl. So the OT explained to me that she was a classic sensory seeker, meaning that she was both numb and super sensitive to the experiential world. So she would want to climb really high or slide down a really tall slide or be pushed on a swing really fast in order to organize banal information like the seam of her socks or a tag in her clothes. When I heard the term sensory seeker, something in me profoundly shifted. That's a thing? I said to this OT, and my mind just flashed to my own past with sensory-seeking behavior. I conjured up images of visiting remote African villages to meet witches, of being unhappy in love again and again after that initial dopamine injection wore off. I had a slew of questions for this woman. How bad is it? I wanted to know. Are we talking theater kid or drug addict? Are we talking skydiver or dominatrix? Will she grow out of it? And also, will I grow out of it? So you see, there's something I haven't told you yet, and it has nothing to do with being Simone's mother, but about being a mother in general. I had spent my motherhood mourning my old life, the one where I made decisions on a whim, like when I decided to live in Fiji, and an artist drew my portrait in all of his notebooks. Or how about when I vacationed in New Zealand and after 4 days with no sleep, a stranger asked me to marry him. I used to be this object of worship, and now I was a servant. I spent my days doing rote tasks that left me feeling like a really deflated version of someone I once knew as myself. So the OT has helped me to understand how to help Simone. She has clued me in to how to let her experience the world in the ways in which her body and her mind demands.
Sorry, it seems we're having technical difficulties, which I'm going to try to tend to. I have an interview with Christina Tucson and Caitlin Langstaff. We got cut off in the middle of a story by Rachel Ephraim. And if you hold on, bear with me for a second, I will see if I can't find what the problem is.
24 and there's so much more. Live alone in a paradise that makes me think of two. Love lost, such a cost. Give me things that don't get lost, like a coin that won't get tossed, rolling home to you.
It's one of those shows. I apologize to Christina Tucson and Caitlin Langstaff and Mike Corso and Rachel Ephraim. This show has now turned into a music show. I'll get the rest of the story program hopefully next month, or I'll upload it to the website. Totally worth seeing, totally worth hearing, and totally worth going to the On the Fly Story Slam at the High Low in Catskill, the third Friday of every month. It is it's just a wonderful way to spend a little time. So, in the meanwhile, I'll listen to random things from my iPad.
I don't wanna talk about things we've gone through, though it's hurting me. Now it's history. I've played all my cards, and that's what you've done too. Nothing more to say, no more ace to play. The winner takes it all, the loser standing small beside the victory. That's a destiny. I was in your arms
Shake my hand. I apologize if it makes you feel bad seeing me so tense. No self-confidence, but you see, the winner takes.
I've never seen this before. I've never listened to this before. This is the longest I've ever listened to ABBA. And yeah, ABBA. All right. Well, here we go. This is sort of Russian roulette. All right, Nina Simone.
Cinnamon, where you gonna run to? Cinnamon, where you gonna run to? Where you gonna run to? All on that day, will I run to the rock? Please hide me and run to the rock. Please hide me and run to the rock. Please hide me, Lord. All on that day, put the rock right out. I can't hide you, the rock right out. I can't hide you, the rock right out. I ain't gonna hide you down. All on that day, I said, rock, what's the matter with you, rock? Don't you see I need you, rock? Lord, Lord, Lord. All on that day, so I ran to the river. It was bleeding around to the sea. It was bleeding around to the sea. It was bleeding all on that day. So I ran to the river. It was boiling around to the sea. It was boiling around to the sea. It was boiling all on that day. So I ran to the Lord. yeah. It was boiling around the sea. It was boiling all on the day. So I ran to the Lord. I said, Lord, hide me. Please hide me. Please help me all on that day. He said, child, where were you when you
Nina Simone and Sinner Man. We're doing a music show for the rest of the Foraging Ahead, and I don't see how to follow Nina Simone with anybody except Nina Simone.
Never keep the bar.
il faut oublier tout, peu s'oublier, qui s'enfuit déjà, oublier le temps des malentendus et le temps perdu, à savoir comment oublier ces heures qui tuaient parfois, coup de pourquoi le cœur du bonheur ne me quitte pas, ne me quitte pas, ne me quitte pas, ne me quitte pas. Moi, je t'enfuirai des balles de pluie venues de pays où il ne pleut pas. Je creuserai la terre jusqu'après ma mort pour couvrir ton corps d'or et de lumière. Je ferai un domaine où l'amour sera roi, où l'amour sera loi, où tu seras reine. Ne me quitte pas, ne me quitte pas, ne me quitte pas, ne me quitte pas. Ne me quitte pas, je t'inventerai des mots insensés que tu comprendras. Je te parlerai de ces amants-là qui ont vu deux fois le cœur s'embraser. Je te raconterai l'histoire de ce roi mort, de n'avoir pas pu te rencontrer. Ne me quitte pas, ne me quitte pas, ne me quitte pas, ne me quitte pas. On a vu souvent rejaillir le feu de l'ancien volcan qu'on croyait trop vu. Il est paru-t-il des terres brûlées dont n'a plus de blé qu'en meilleur avril. Et combien le soir pour qu'un ciel flamboie, le rouge et le noir ne s'épousent-ils pas? Ne me quitte pas, ne me quitte pas, ne me quitte pas, ne me quitte pas. Je ne vais plus parler, je me cacherai là, à te regarder, danser et sourire, à t'écouter, chanter et puis rire. Laisse-moi devenir l'ombre de ton ombre, l'ombre de ta main, l'ombre de ton chien. Ne me quitte pas. Ne me quitte pas, ne me quitte pas.
Seems. Sea lion woman, sea lion woman, dressed in red, make a man lose his head. Sea lion woman, sea lion woman, black dress on for $1,000 she wears and she moans. Sea lion woman, wiggle, wiggle, her
cat wink at a man and he wink back. Now I'm tired, she like a woman. Empty his pockets and wreck his days. Make him love her and shoot fly away. And she wreck his days, and she make him love her, then she shoot fly away. She got a black dress on for $1,000. She wail and she moan.
Put a spell on you. Cause you're mine. Do, 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 do. You better stop the things you do. No, I can't stand it. You're running around. You know better, Daddy. I can't stand it 'cause you put me down. Yeah, yeah. I put a spell on you. Because you're mine.
Let it all out. Break down and let it all out. remember when you used to love me, and oh, how sweet it was. But it's not enough just to remember, 'cause what good is the past? Once upon a time, all those old memories can set my heart at ease. So before I lose my mind, yeah, I'm gonna break down and let it all out. Break down and let it all out. My eyes are opening now, I see it's all over for you and me. Break down and let it all out. Break down and let it all out. Now my aching heart knows that we're apart. Break down and let it all out. Break down and let it all out. All those old memories can't set my heart at ease. Break. My skin is black, my arms are long, my hair is woolly, my back is strong, strong enough to take the pain inflicted again and again. What do they call me? My name is Aunt Sarah. My name is Aunt Sarah. Aunt Sarah. Skin is yellow, my hair is long, between two worlds I do belong. My father was rich and white, he forced my mother late. What do they call me? My name is Sophronia. My name is Sophronia. My skin is tan, my hair is fine, my hips invite you, my mouth like wine. Whose little girl am I? Anyone who has money to buy.